is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. In the background of the debate about putting the FC Stadium in the West End this year were unfilled promises and actions of the city 50 years ago. A powerful collection of photographs throw light on that history and are the basis for an exhibit entitled Finding Kenyon Barr, Exploring the Photographs of Cincinnati's Lower West End. The exhibit is part of Photo Focus and is on display at the Myers Gallery in the Steger Student Life Center on the UC campus through October 23rd. To talk about the exhibit, we are joined today by the exhibit curator and PhD candidate, Anne Delano Steinert, and the curator of audiovisual collections at the Cincinnati Museum Center, Jim D'Amico. Anne Delano Steinert and Jim D'Amico, welcome to Cincinnati Edition. It's really good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
This is a fascinating exhibit, the Kenyon Barr Exploring Photographs of Cincinnati's Lower West End. It's really, as both of you know, I've been interested in these photos for a long time. But Anne, just to get us started, where was Kenyon Barr? Because people don't necessarily know that term at all.
Sure. So there was never actually a neighborhood called Kenyon Barr that the residents of that place called Kenyon Barr. Kenyon Barr is a name that was devised by urban planners as part of an urban renewal strategy. And so the people who lived there just said that they lived in the West End. And for the sake of the exhibit, I've differentiated that by calling it the Lower West End. Today, the neighborhood is what we know as Queensgate. The name Kenyon Barr that the urban planners chose to use derives from two main thoroughfares. So there was Kenyon Avenue and Barr Street that ran parallel right through the middle of this area. And it's from those two street names that they created this place called Kenyon Barr.
Well, you just introduced another term that people may not know, and that's Queensgate, because that was a made-up word, too.
Right.
After the fact, Queensgate was what? Is what?
Well, so I actually, as part of this exhibit, hosted some events, and one of the speakers was Bud Haupt, who was a former urban planner with the city, and he remembered that the city had a hard time selling the properties that were cleared in this area, and that they called in a marketing firm to help them. How do we market these these properties? And the first thing the marketing firm said is, you know, this name isn't sexy enough, right? And so they rebranded the neighborhood as Queensgate, coming from Queen City of the West and Gateway of city, I guess. I don't know. So they created this name that they thought would help them sell the property. So it's really just
it's a light industrial park.
Well, right. And that was the original intention of this whole urban renewal project, was to clear this residential neighborhood to create a space for light industry within the city boundaries.
Well, Jim, let's talk about this collection. And you oversee all of the photos, the images at the Cincinnati Historical Society Library and Archives. What is the Kenyon Barr collection?
Well, the Kenyon Barr collection is made up of about 2,700 photographs. And they date back to the earliest that I found was November to December 1957. But they don't have the telltale sign, the sign of the man holding the sign.
We'll get to that one.
Yeah. But the majority of the collection is photographs from 1959, the summer of 1959, over a course of, I think it was about 3 months that the city was photographing.
And what they were doing, what were they focusing on here? These aren't art photographs.
No, but I think people could consider them at some point art photographs, but they were documentations, evidence of buildings that were going to be demolished. And the photographs also are key to the maps. There are 19 maps that are also part of the collection. Those aren't online yet, but we have digitized those. So the key code that's on the sign corresponds to the map, the corresponding map.
Let's describe that sign, Anne.
Sure.
Because it's prominent in all these photographs.
Right. So each one of the photographs is documenting a particular parcel that's slated for demolition. And there's a photograph, a black and white photograph. They're 3.5 inches square originally. And they have the building or the parcel in the back with a city employee standing towards the front of the photograph holding a big black sign.
Big!
Like 3 or 4 feet wide, big sign. And the sign says Kenyon Barr at the top in these kind of jinky, like letters that aren't all straight. And then it has the date of the photograph, and then it has a number, which tells you where the parcel is.
And frequently the guy who was holding it up so that you only
covered
see half
face.
A state. Right. And I am convinced that that person is the person who ended up as Wilson in Home Improvement, where you only saw half of his face above the fence post.
Well,
or at least
actually,
an inspiration.
Right. It's actually not one person. So I've documented that there are at least 10 different people out there holding that sign. And they range from some little whippersnapper who couldn't have been older than 18 years old to someone who is in a suit and looks very official and got pulled out from behind his desk to go do this job one day, I'm sure.
So, you know, these photographs, as Jim described them, as you've just described them, they're really the focus is on buildings that the planners thought were going to be torn down. As far as the planners were concerned, these were slum buildings. They were going to clear them. They were going to improve the city, so and
right.
so. And as a historian, when you look at those photographs, what do you see?
Well, the reason I did the exhibition in the first place is that these photographs show a vital, active, busy urban neighborhood full of people living their lives. So the guy holding the sign is oblivious generally to lots of interesting city life that's going on behind him. You know, you see kids playing in fire hydrants. You see people walking their dogs, people going in and out of shops, wonderful storefront displays, busy, busy commercial areas. You see beautiful churches, synagogues. The Friends Meeting House was there, schools, parks. It really is a complete community, like a really vital urban place that was totally functional. And the photographs show that.
So Jim, as you look at these, and Anne's just described the variety of people, what have you seen? You've obviously spent some real time with these too.
Yes, and it wasn't until, well, when I came in October 2014 to start the job at the Museum Center, that's when I met Anne, and she was the most passionate about this collection. And what really strikes me about the photographs, I think, primarily are the kids that are in them, because they're just having a good time. But in the background, a lot of times the parents or adults are sitting conversing with each other, and you can see on their faces like, oh, they know what's coming. Mm. But the children are having a good old time, like everything is fine.
They're mugging for the camera.
Yeah,
I mean, take
totally
a camera
mugging.
Out on the street and kids are going to be attracted. They're having fun because they don't know the what's about to happen.
Right.
And your point about people leaning out the window, adults
yes.
leaning out the window, people sitting on stoops, talking with each other, they have a very different look on their face.
Right.
And let's just be clear. One thing we haven't talked about is these are all African-American residents of Cincinnati.
That's right.
So
right.
the displacement that this project caused was 25,000 Cincinnati residents of African descent displaced. So it's not, you know, the pictures are particularly poignant because they document this incredibly vital African American neighborhood more so than some other collection, right? So there's that other piece that it's a really distinct and important demographic group within the city of Cincinnati.
Right. You know, frequently in history books, I've written this way and you probably have too, you know, people were displaced from the West End and then they moved to Walnut Hills and to Evanston and to Avondale and all, you know, and it all gets contained in a paragraph and you lose sort of the nitty gritty of what was lost. And you starting to hint at that, both of you were starting to hint at that. One is the people, especially the adults who realize they're going to lose their homes, but also this it's not just the individuals. It's this whole network of a society, of a community, and all the things that go into that, that you begin to realize those aren't easily picked up and moved. A lot of them were destroyed in the process.
Oh, yeah. Melvin Greer, who's was a former photographer for the Cincinnati Post, grew up in this neighborhood, and he often says it's as if an atomic bomb went off in your childhood. That, like, I can go back. I can walk to the school I went to. I can see the house I grew up in. I can visit the shops. I can walk the ways I walked. But when residents, these 25,000 displaced people, go back to the West End, there is nothing there. Their childhood has been entirely vaporized. And that, you know, think about the kind of emotional, psychological trauma that that would cause, to have no way to root yourself in the past.
And I think to dig into that a little bit, it's that network, it's the social structures. It's the churches, something like Southern Baptist that had 2,500 members, or tiny little stores. One of the photos that I've used in an article that I wrote on this collection, Brown's Grocery, Spencer and Alice Brown on West Court Street. I'm sure that business was just destroyed. It was a mom and pop little front store. Right. They lived in the back of the store. And, you know, all of that's gone. The YMCA, the 9th Street YMCA, the African-American YMCA.
Gone.
All of that's gone. You don't just pick that up and move it.
There were actually 90 churches displaced as part of this project. So if you think about the kind of community that happens in one church and multiply that by 90, that's really an incredible loss. Yeah.
And those are the stories I heard over and over again from the panels that Ann had put on in the first part of the exhibits back in November. Every resident, it seemed to be the same story. It's like you can be walking down the street and talking about like the kids, they all respected their elders. Everybody was like, all the kids kept in line because they knew every family was watching out. And you just didn't cause any trouble, but it was this, everybody knew each other. And
then those families got dispersed all over the city. So all that social network was just totally dismantled.
And remember, that's happening right at the beginning of the 1960s. So you are dispersing, you're undermining a community network. It's not surprising that we have two race riots by 1967-68.
Yep.
Right. And 67 and 68, we have two in a row in this city. Destroying the network, the community that people live in is really dangerous.
And also moving those people or forcing those people to move into other neighborhoods which are already established in a different way. So now Avondale or Mount Auburn, wherever, has to adjust to this new influx of people. And of course there's going to be conflict about that sort of contested space.
And in that larger sense, were the planners concerned about that? Was there any systematic way of helping people to transition?
Well, the people got lots of promises. In 1956, the city needed to pass a tax levy to fund their one-third portion of the cost of this project. And every resident of this neighborhood was sent a letter that said, you will be rehoused in new modern dwellings. And so there were lots of promises like that. Building owners did receive some minimal payment for their properties, but the majority of this neighborhood was renters, and the renters got very little in terms of monetary assistance or relocation help.
So as you, Jim, you just brought up that one of the things that Ann has done as in the course of where this exhibit has been over the last 8 months or so, 10 months, gathered people together who once lived there. How does that, you're the photo curator, you take care of the photos, the artifact themselves, right. But how do those stories change the way future researchers are going to be able to understand these images?
That's a really good question. And I think the most important thing is we have to document those stories through like oral, maybe there's an oral history program, because otherwise the evidence there that they've witnessed for the course of their life is just going to be an oral tradition. But until we can capture that to get the full context and the full breadth of the lived experience, and even to this day, will really make the images much more stronger.
Yeah.
But that's only useful if we can find a way to push that learning that we take from the past into the way we act in the future.
Right.
And I think that's the trick, is that how do we take something like an oral history collection and move it into action?
Well, right. And just to finish up here, because we're running out of time, what is the enduring importance of not just the photographs as artifacts, but the story and the stories that go along with this? What do you think the contemporary enduring?
Well, the reason I did the exhibit in the first place is that I feel that very few Cincinnatians know this story, know that this ever happened. People of color remember it more fully than Caucasian people do, but even then, it's little known, right? And so the idea is, when you look at the way that promises were made and broken and people were displaced, you come to understand why we have a community of people who are distrustful, aren't, you know, feel like everything is just an empty promise. And so I think for me, the big takeaway is to really understand that Cincinnati's African-American community comes at their nervousness about city government and city plans from a true lived experience.
FC Cincinnati going to over the West End.
Correct. Yep. And so I think that if we can back up and start from that place of you have experienced this tragic loss, and that's how we move forward, we will make better choices for the future of Cincinnati.
Well, Anne Delano Steinert and Jim D'Amico, thank you for being with us today. And I really want to encourage people to go see Finding Kenyon Barr, exploring the photographs of Cincinnati's Lower West End before October the 23rd.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Sam.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Segment producer is Layla Shikui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.